Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, April 9th, 2020. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, certified Cicerone and head brewer of Twin Span Brewing, Adam Ross, joins us to stand up for brown ale, a style that he enjoys brewing, and in fact, the first beer that he brewed for his fledgling brewery in Davenport, Iowa. If you go to basicbrewing.com, you can find archives of our audio and video shows. If you go to basicbrewingshop.com, you can find our DVDs, our brewer's logbooks, and other Basic Brewing gear. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Basic Brewing and find our show page on Facebook as well. We have a cool Basic Brewing app on iTunes and Amazon.com, and we're found all over the place where fine podcasts are served up. If you want to support us financially, check out patreon.com/basicbrewing, and thanks to everybody who is helping out in that way. If you go to patreon.com/basicbrewing, you can see a long list of stuff that you can access if you sign up as a supporter. Many thanks to those of you who are sticking with us as financial supporters in these trying times. And if you're going through a rough patch financially, no pressure. Take care of yourself and those that you care for, and come back to us when things get better. In the meantime, we'll continue to do our best to bring you fun stuff that's worth your while. I hope you're weathering this unprecedented time well and happy, or at least making the best of it as much as you can. Seems like every day there's something else that's mind-blowing, so it's easy to feel out of control. So I hope this show helps you out with a little bit of a normality every week, or as normal as we get around here. Hey, there's helpful news from our sponsors at Tavor. Megan at Tavor says every week they are releasing a new Support the Breweries box on their app. Each box will donate a portion of the proceeds to craft brewers' guilds to help make it easier for breweries to self-distribute and sell online. You can find out more about that by going to Tavor.com, T-A-V as in Victor, O-U-R.com, and clicking on the blog link at the top of the page. If you listen to this show, you know about Tavor. It's the way to select delicious craft beers that you may not be able to find in your area, especially helpful now because they deliver them to you. It's not a Beer of the Month Club where someone else chooses beer for you. You only pay for the beer that you choose over the course of the month. Signing up for Tavor is free. Just create an account at Tavor.com, T-A-V as in Victor, O-U-R.com, and download their iPhone or Android app. You'll receive notifications for two new beers each day that are available for purchase with in-depth tasting notes from Philip at Tavor. This month, look for selections from Block 15, Heater Allen, Blackstack, and Varietal Beer Company. If you're not interested in the beers that you see, no worries. Just skip the ones that you don't want. However, when you do see something that you do want, and if you're like me, you will, don't wait. Just click to get it and add it to your crate. Your beer arrives fresh every few weeks, allowing you enough time to fill a box and pay the least shipping. So why don't you check it out? It doesn't cost anything to sign up, and there's no obligation to purchase anything. In fact, if I can ask you a favor, go to Tavor.com, T-A-V as in Victor, O-U-R.com, or download the app, and when you sign up, enter the promo code BASICBREWING, that's all one word, and you'll get $10 off your first shipment of $25 or more. Again, it's free to sign up, and there's no obligation to purchase. Sign up at Tavor.com, T-A-V as in Victor, O-U-R.com, or with the Tavor app and enter Basic Brewing as the promo code. You'll hear me talking about this beer that I brewed in the interview with Adam, but I brewed a brown ale this past weekend based on the recipe from listener Steven in Rhode Island. Now, I don't have much experience with brown ales, but I'm very excited about this one. It's got a bunch of American hops, but Steve convinced me to use tartan yeast from Imperial, which I believe is a Scottish ale yeast, so I'm very interested to taste how that turns out. The wort tasted great going into the fermenter, and I recently blew the keg that had the K-Row Mild in it, so timing is everything. Got to keep beer in the pipeline. And speaking of the K-Row Syrup Mild Ale, I'm planning to release to the general public the Basic Brewing video episode about that beer on this coming Friday. Financial supporters have already seen it with the early release. Steve and I shot it before the social distancing thing, so we actually get to be in the same room. Our friends and sponsors Desiree and Dave of High Gravity in Tulsa tell me that homebrewing is on an upswing nowadays. Y'all are home a lot and looking for productive ways to pass the time. Our friend Brian Sorensen, who you've heard on this show, wrote a blog post on his site, beerinarkansas.com, about dusting off his brewing gear after many years and brewing a delicious IPA. Well, if you're itching to brew, go to highgravitybrew.com and check out the Build Your Own Beer page. Of course, you can find a ton of ingredient kits as well at highgravitybrew.com. But the Build Your Own Beer page is great for those who know how to put together their own recipes or have found one in a book or online that they'd like to try. At the Build Your Own Beer page on highgravitybrew.com, you can see the inventory of a well-stocked homebrew store right there in one place, a huge variety of ingredients. And as you add things to your cart and scroll down, your total stays right there at the bottom of the window, always visible, so you can track your cost as it goes along. It's great. And if you are financially stable during these times, and if you're looking to upgrade that dusty old gear into shiny new electric setup, highgravitybrew.com is an excellent place for that as well. From single vessel systems like mine to two or three vessel electric systems, from 5 gallons up to 2 barrels, highgravitybrew.com has your solution. You know their Warthog brand of controllers and systems, but they also have other brands as well. And if you use the code EBC75BB, that's EBC75BB, you can save $75 off your electric gear purchase. Take the pain out of propane and brew your way through at family-owned and operated highgravitybrew.com. Okay, if you've heard last week's show, Chris Colby had some fun trash-talking brown ales, his least favorite style of beer, apparently. Well, I heard from you guys who like the style and have had success in brewing it, so I asked one of you, Adam Ross of Twin Span Brewing, to help me find out why it's a style worth a second visit. Adam Ross, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Hi, James. Glad to be here.
Where are you at?
I am in an underground basement bunker in my home office in Davenport, Iowa. It's part of the Quad Cities. We sit right on the Mississippi River, straddling the line between Iowa and Illinois.
And you are a certified Cicerone Level 2, and you're also the head brewer of Twin Span Brewing. Tell me about Twin Span.
Yeah, Twin Span, we're not quite open yet. We were planning to open here real soon, and then the virus has pushed everyone's plans back. We are a 15-barrel brew house with a dining room and kitchen attached. We built new. It's beautiful space, great location. We're right next to this huge sports complex right on the interstate. So kind of the entry point for a lot of people as they come into the Quad Cities, and our brewery's sitting right there.
So what's the focus of the brewery? What do you make?
Yeah, so that's a good question, one I haven't exactly figured out yet. So we are playing up to the Cicerone packing here, since the brewer me is a certified Cicerone. So we're going to go with relatively traditional styles, and I like to put a little spin on a lot of them. The very first beer I brewed out there was an English brown ale. We'll talk about later. And we've actually been really busy brewing out there. We bought all this ingredients and yeast, and we need to make use of it. So we're going to have a ton of beer and hopefully a way to sell it here soon. We have, just yesterday, did a really big double IPA, American IPA. West Coast style, pretty traditional, actually, even though it is a double. Also have a style that's another style that's near and dear to my heart, a British Golden Ale, which I think is another one of those, like the brown and underserved style. It's low ABV. I think that one's at 4.4, and it's got a big charge of American hops at the end. But it's gonna be a really nice beer this summer if you're sitting outside.
Wow.
Also have an Irish stout. That is my favorite style, and that the version I brewed is version, I don't know, 20 something of that recipe. I've really dialed that one in. And then we have a a style that doesn't really exist, a pre-prohibition British lager. Mostly British ingredients, but kind of put a pre-prohibition spin on it. And then a Maibock I brewed. So yeah, we have a lot of beer.
Yeah.
And we have enough enough ingredients for a few more. Just trying to find a way to plan this all out and brew it in a way that our strategies changed because of the virus, like it's impacted everybody. I mean, we would have had the doors open and people could come into the dining room and have the beers on draft. Now we're shifting more to we're probably going to open with beers going to go orders of beer out of growlers or cans if we can find cans.
Mm.
Those are pretty challenging to source right now.
Yeah, I understand that growlers are kind of hard to come by right now.
Yeah, I think growlers are still pretty easy to find, glass growlers, but yeah, anything can related is pretty, I don't know about impossible, but pretty difficult to come by at the moment.
Wow. So we were talking before we started the recording, and you said, you know, it's obviously a negative situation what you're in now, but the timing of it for you, since you're still getting, you know, getting up and getting started, you don't have a lot of people on board yet. So in a way, that's good.
Yeah, it's we were in the middle of active interviews, and we'd hired one person and offered another. And we had a few people we were going to call back on before everything shut down. So it's really just our one hire and the three of us founding partners that are working. And we still have part of the brewery or the dining room under construction. And we've had to change our plans because of that as well. We can't have too many people in one place at once. So we are splitting the days. The construction crew's out there in the morning, and we can go out in the evening or weekends. So, and then when we are in the brew house, we're all trying to be as distant as possible. We are across paths. We're keeping more than 6 feet away. We haven't put on mask or gloves or anything, but I'm typically in the brew house covered in some kind of cleaning industrial chemical or my own brewer's gloves. So I feel like we're safe back there.
Well, I wish all the best of luck, both on the personal health side and the business side as well, the health of the business. And you know, it's a tricky time for everybody, and hopefully we can buckle down and get through this as quickly as possible. But on to happier things, as I say often lately. you were one of the people who contacted me in response to Chris Colby's tirade against brown ales. And you said, you know, as you said, the first beer that you brewed, you know, at this brand new brewery was a brown ale. So Chris, you know, he I guess has had a bunch of bad brown ales, and that would turn you against any style. But in your opinion, what makes brown ales good, or what makes a good brown ale, I guess, to begin with?
Yeah, and I totally get it, what Chris said, and I agree with him in the case that there are a lot of bad brown ales out there. Brown is one of those styles that, I mean, all it has going for it at first glance is the color. So, yeah, it's like saying a white or a red wine. It's like, okay, but can you be more specific? So brown ale, I feel like, especially with a lot of homebrewers when they first start out, and even some smaller breweries, maybe they're going for a pale ale and they use too much crystal malt, or they boil too long. And they're like, you know what, this is a brown ale now. And that just does a disservice to the style, to what is really an old style that, I like I said, I think it's underserved now and misunderstood. But yeah, I wouldn't blame anyone for not liking the style, given what's out there.
It's kind of like when you have a contaminated beer and then you just say, oh, it's not a pale ale, it's a Belgian.
Right? Oh, I've done so many. The last time I did a BJCP judging event, I asked to not be put on the sour category. I was getting a little fed up with, you know, those accidental sours that get submitted.
I think I've told this story many times, but I think the first time Steve and I judged a competition, they put us on the Belgian category. And I think one of the descriptors I wrote down was animal shelter. Because it smelled like, you know, disinfectant and a little bit of fecal contamination. So, you know, but I think the awareness since then of sour beers and what makes a good sour beer has come up a lot since then. So hopefully that doesn't happen as much as it used to.
Yeah, and it has gotten a lot better. That was there was one flight of beers I judged years back that just – I think the one that won was the only one that was intentionally soured. So, yeah, I think we're getting better. And I think we're getting better with these other styles, too, like the brown. Although I did have at a homebrew event a couple years ago, I had a brown Kolsch. And I had to go up to the brewer and say, oh, what's going on here? Kolsches aren't really brown. And he was like, yeah, it was a really old kit of extract. And honestly, it wasn't that bad. It just like, I don't know what you call it in that case. Try to pass it off as an alt beer, maybe? I don't know.
It's a corrugated brew.
Yeah, you would expect huge oxidized off flavors, but really wasn't. It really wasn't that bad.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's not recommended to brew with old ingredients and you know, hope that you get something that's accidentally good.
If anyone out there, for the sake of brown ale, if you accidentally make a brown ale accidentally and didn't intend to, just own up to it, call it something, call it what it is, not a brown ale.
So first of all, I guess we should talk about the English side of things. Because I guess that's where they originated. So what, you know, put your marketing hat on and you know, write the description that would go on the beer menu, the beer list for your English brown ale.
Oh, I don't really have much of a marketing hat. But a lot of, I think brown ales need to be malt forward. They need to be, especially with English, we're talking caramel flavors. We're talking these nutty flavors. I mean, to the point where I believe at one point one of the styles, versions of the style might have been called nut brown ale. Mm-hmm. And that's what Sam Smith calls their beer, is a nut brown. So you need that nutty flavor to it. And as you said, the style kind of originated in England. They're the ones who really championed it, at least as we know it, a brown ale. Like I mentioned briefly, you could almost call an alt beer in Germany a brown ale. Dunkels can get kind of brown. Belgians have Doubles and Oud Bruins, but no one really considers those, quote, brown ales. Mm-hmm. England kind of came up with it, and a lot of that was due to a lot of the malt historically, because they didn't have the modern technology. It was brownish malt, so a lot of beers were brown, and then things kind of shifted into porter territory and stout territory, and brown got kind of left by the wayside. But then they brought it back late 19th century, and then in the 20th, it kind of, in Britain, it's kind of a huge overlap with the dark mild beers. Some Britons considered brown ale really to just be a stronger bottled version of the mild. And it doesn't get that modern definition until Newcastle comes onto the scene and comes up with their own version of a brown ale. And Samuel Smith comes out with their nut brown ale. And then Americans get a hold of it and Americanize the brown ale.
Well, before we get to this side of the ocean, what makes it a brown ale and not a porter or a stout?
Roast character, really. And I think size factors into it a little bit, too. So I think if you have a BJCP totally compliant brown ale and you add a little roast to it, you've instantly pushed it into brown porter or porter territory. So no roast character. Certainly you want some of that nutty brown flavor that you really, I don't know about only, but the only way I really know how to get that is through using brown malt. And brown malt, you don't see in these American styles typically, and you don't see in the Belgian or the German styles. So that's a key factor to an English brown ale.
Yeah, more toasty than roasty. Would that be accurate?
That would be accurate. And back to the Germans, their browns are, I describe them as, you know, bread toast, bread crust, kind of that dark breadiness. And the Britons are the same way as well.
Talk about your malt bill for your beer.
Yeah, so like I said, I iterated through it a few times, and before landing on what we have right now. Ours shoots straight down the middle of the style guidelines. It's 4.8% alcohol, so right in the middle. I use brown malt, a very deliberate dosage of brown malt, but a little bit goes a long ways. I think we're something like 8% of the grist, 6 to 8% of the grist. I use oats in mine as well, and I toast the oats. I don't know if there's any historic basis to that. I wanted this to kind of be its own thing as a Scottish brown ale, so headed in the direction of Newcastle, and the Scots seem to like to use oats quite a bit, and toasting it just adds this extra nutty flavor to it, and I believe adds a bit more of that silky mouthfeel.
Yeah, that sounds delicious. Sounds really good.
Yeah.
What about hops?
Really restrained. You don't want to be able to detect the hops necessarily in my recipe. And if you look at the style guidelines for British Brown, I believe they do mention some hop presence can be there, but it's not hop forward. It's malt forward.
Now, let's shift gears over to our side of the ocean. And also yeast. I guess we didn't talk about yeast. I'm assuming an English ale yeast would be best.
Yeah, like Chris mentioned, the Fuller strain is excellent. I think it gives that nice kind of dark stone fruit character. And then it fishes a little early and gets out of the way. And if you had just a hair of diacetyl, I think that's okay for the style. And you certainly get that if you don't ferment the Fuller strain correctly. If you don't do a diacetyl rest, you will have some diacetyl buttery flavor in there.
And how do you adjust your water chemistry? What's the water like up there?
So here in town, our water is actually really good towards brown and English styles. The last water report put us pretty close to London, and at least what Beersmith list in the program. We don't use it though. We are all RO at Twins Fan, and I have been at home for a while. The chloramines and the variability throughout the year with the Mississippi being right next to us, it's hard to really know what's in the water. And with all my beers, I want it to be as close to the source as possible. So when I do a Weiss beer, it's going to be German or Bavarian water profile. For this brown ale I've done, I actually use the Edinburgh water profile. So it's a Scottish profile that does have a lot of minerality to it, but it also has a lot high chloride to sulfate ratio, so it's a bit chewy water profile. And I think for all brown ales, you want to bump up the chloride so you get that nice full mouthful.
Nice. Okay, let's put our from our fedora to from our oh wait, what do they use? What do they wear over there in England? They don't wear any hats anymore. Nobody wears any hats anymore.
I don't know. I've only ever been in a layover in Heathrow, and people aren't really wearing hats. So maybe the rest of the country they are, but I don't know, pork pie hats, the old,
or a bowler. How about that? Yeah, we go from our bowler to our cowboy hat. How about that? And switch gears here. What about the American brown? How do we American brewers, put our own spin on that?
Yeah, and cowboy hats really appropriate because the Texans were kind of the ones who really championed the American brown ale when it was first brought over here. So as with most American versions or American styles of beer, take the British version and tamp down the malt character a little bit and bump up the hops quite a bit and then raise the ABV a little bit. So it's funny. I had to freshen up on some of my history before I was talking to you. So I looked into it, and in most cases of these modern brown ale styles, they're in response to pale styles that have gotten really popular. So even the alt beer, kind of a reaction to the pale lagers in the mid-19th century, taking a historic style and modifying it and making it something different. The resurgence of brown ale in early 20th century in the UK is in part a response to how these pale beers have really taken over and people wanted something different. Same thing in America. So early 1980s, pale ale starting to get really popular in the American craft scene. And it appears the Texans were, I'm sure others as well, said, hey, let's do something a little different. Let's go with a brown style.
And so does the malt bill change all that much? Is it just adding hops to what's already existing?
I'm a proponent of if you're doing, trying to stay style accurate, you stay within the correct country for your ingredients. So we don't have brown malt that I'm aware of in America, in the U.S. So you can't lean on that crutch. But you can use and part of the thing with American styles, you get a flexibility. People as traditionalists on a lot of these styles, you could use some Munich, any specialty malts that are Americanized. You could get your color from things like molasses, and I think that would make a really interesting brown ale. You would have a much less malty grain bill. You're probably going to be using two row, which isn't as characteristic as like Maris Otter or some of the European malts. And then you're getting your color from crystal and other adjunct sources.
And I wonder, I mean, if you did I've seen some taste tests, you know, where people put, like wine in a thermos that you can't tell what color it is. And, you know, people taste it and then they have to guess if it's red wine or white wine. I'm wondering, you know, if you get like a nice hoppy American brown ale and gave it to somebody in a covered container, whether they would actually whether they would know that it was brown. Would that be accurate or would that, does the brown character of the malts, you know, does it actually make that big of an impact on the malt bill flavor?
That'd be really fun to do. I like tricking people who have their preset notions about beer styles, and I encourage people that know me to give me beer and try to trick me. So yeah, I think it would be able to notice it's not a pale ale or it's not something else. And part of what you just said there made me think of one of the Cicerone exercises. So if you are a Cicerone, if you're studying for it, or if you just want to have some fun, they sell these study guides, and they're these little ringed notebooks that have references to different books and stuff you should study. and they have the style descriptors, and then they have these tasting exercises. And I started studying after I'd been homebrewing for 10 plus years, and I learned so much through those. One of those exercises is to blindly taste, put a American brown up against an English brown up against a Dunkel, I think. Dunkel or Dunkel Weissbier. And I did it and had my and was blindfolded and had my wife pour them for me and mix them up for me. And I was expecting to say, this is going to be a no-brainer. This is going to be so easy. And as is the case with most of these exercises, I struggled a little bit at first and realized how similar some of these styles are. But I still got them right because the American styles are more aggressive than the German or British styles, and they have more hops. That's almost always an indicator it's in American styles if it's hop forward versus European counterparts. And it is a little grainier, rougher around the edges there.
And not only with bitterness, but with the hop flavor and aroma as well, with lots of hops coming in, you know, at the end of the boil, and maybe a dry hopping as well.
Yeah, more bitter, bigger ABV, bigger body, and then more aromatic hops at the end. That's, like I said, true of most American versions of European styles.
And the yeast character is practically non-existent, I would imagine.
Right, the base malt and the yeast are pretty dang clean.
So I got some other responses from people out there who, you know, some just commented, you know, hey, I like that style. But I if you remember at the end of the episode, I read a letter from Colin in Minneapolis who had a question about water chemistry and partial mashing. And, you know, his question wasn't in, you know, he didn't mention brown ales in the question. But I, you know, since he mentioned Chris, I went ahead and read it on the show. Well, I told Colin that I was using his question on the show, and then he wrote back saying everything came full circle on this one. He ordered a kit from High Gravity to support them and Basic Brewing. Well, thank you, Colin. Colin says, I didn't realize it was a partial mash when I ordered, but jumped in anyway. It was so simple and sparked me to jump to the next level of brewing. So that's great. I'm extremely grateful for that mistake. The cherry on the top was that the first batch was a brown ale.
Nice.
So the kit that he got was a brown ale, and I didn't even know it. How crazy is that?
That's great, and kudos to High Gravity for converting someone over to closer to the all grain side.
People
who come in the homebrew club, if they're pensive about doing all grain, I'm like, just go out, get a strainer bag, and brew in a bag, and go all in. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So Colin says, don't tell Chris.
Oops.
But I said, no, Chris won't. He'll think it's funny. So that's awesome. That made my day when I read that. It was pretty funny. And then I got some recipes from listeners. If you will entertain them, Adam, and I'm not necessarily looking for criticism or critiquing of the recipes, but it's just interesting to see, you know, different people's takes on the style.
Yeah, absolutely.
Scott from Bloomer, Wisconsin wrote in, and his brown ale consists of 3 pounds of Canadian Turo, 3 pounds of Maris Otter, half a pound of American chocolate malt, half a pound of American Crystal 40, half a pound of British brown malt. So it's kind of, you know, from both sides of the ocean there. But then, a quarter pound of Victory malt as well. But then he definitely takes an American twist, and for 60 minutes he puts in half an ounce of Chinook leaf pellets or leaf hops, 30 minutes, half an ounce of Cascade, and in a flame out he says half an ounce of a Chinook leaf, half an ounce of Cascade, and then he ferments with a US 05. So there's some English, there's a little bit of an English accent on the malt bill there. But the hops are definitely the American side.
And Canadian accent with that Canadian tour. Huh?
Oh, yeah. Eh? Oh, sorry.
So he's crossing boundaries there. That sounds really good.
Yeah, it sounds...
And like I said, the American styles, you get more flexibility. So yeah, if you want to throw in brown malt and push it in that direction, yeah, more power to you.
Ken from Facebook says, here is my brown ale recipe. It took me several years to get one that I really liked. So, you know, again, the brown ale is kind of a tricky style. He says, nice yes. and roasty with Cascade hops and American ale yeast. Now I brew this one every fall. He calls it Brown Bear, original gravity 1057, final gravity 1012, so it's a pretty big one. 10 pounds of two-row, 12 ounces of chocolate malt, 4 ounces of honey malt, and 4 ounces of special B. So that, you know, it's got a bit of a, you know, malty sweet character, it sounds like. 0.75 ounces of Magnum for 60 minutes, an ounce of Cascade at 10 minutes. And then he says 2 packs of US05 or one and do a starter. And that's for a 5-gallon batch. So
yeah, Special B may or may not be a secret ingredient in my brown ale.
We won't tell.
And I know it's not British. It's not British. But that is such an excellent malt. And I think it sounds like he's putting it to good work there in that recipe.
Well, it's B stands for British, doesn't it? So special British. That's what.
There you go.
And then the first one I got was from Stephen in Rhode Island. He says, just listen to your latest show about brown ale. I have to say I'm offended. Not really. He says, one of my favorite styles is American brown ale. I have a couple of recipes that I've been working on for a while now. One, my homebrew club, the East Bay Homebrew Club. So shout out to East Bay homebrewers. One, the Boil Rumble. Their contest with the brown ale. We as a club used the base recipe and added coffee and maple syrup, too. Melvin Brewing is a part of winning the contest, has brewed and distributed it around the country. It's called New England Breakfast Ale, which sounds pretty dang tasty. He says the latest brown I've brewed is around 6%. I start with pale ale malt, about 78%, then 8% Munich, 4% wheat, 4% Crystal 80, 4% chocolate malt, and 2% Carafa 2. So it sounds pretty dark and chewy and tasty. He says, I change up the hops, but I bitter at 60 minutes to 14 IBUs, and then I go with 2 ounces of American hops at 5 minutes left in the boil and 1 ounce at flame out. I pitch US 05 yeast and don't dry hop. It's a beer I like to keep on tap most of the time. It goes great with food, partially barbecue. He says, maybe Chris should give this one a try.
Yeah, and that food pairing, that's interesting. No, brown is very, very good to pair with. Big part of the Cicerone test is food pairing, and that wasn't something I had much experience with. But brown is just, because of those toasty notes and caramel notes, they play really well with a lot of bread-based things, maybe gravy-based a lot of darker meats. Interestingly, English brown ale with takeout Chinese. Dude, I don't remember which dish it was, but that was a home run. I was not expecting that one.
Yum. I use Guinness in what a recipe that I call Labor Day Beer Stroganoff, where I take chunks of stew meat and I grill them just to give the grill marks and a bit of smoky grill texture. And then I cook that in the Instant Pot with I caramelize some onions and some bacon grease, and then put the beer in there, and then put the meat in and pressure cook it for like 40 minutes, so it's dry, you know, it's fall apart tender. and then I put some half and half at the end of it. Oh man, it's good. Brown malt
sounds really good. Huh?
Yeah, brown malt to go good in there as well.
So, especially with those caramelized onions that you add into it. I bet the brown would really help bring those out.
Yeah.
Make them pop.
So I took Steven's recipe and I gave it to, or I forwarded the email to Steve Wilkes. And I said, you know, here, Steve, have your way with this. And so he wrote me up a recipe. He called it James Brown Ale. which nice. Which was accidental. But he said, hey, just, you know.
Is it a little funky or what?
I don't know. It's too hot. Too hot in the hot tub. Now, so what Steve came up with the recipe was 9 pounds of pale ale malt, 15 ounces of tin Level Bond Munich, 7 ounces of chocolate malt, 7 ounces of Crystal 80, 7 ounces of wheat, and then 4 ounces of Black Prinz, and that's what he had instead of the Carafa too. So that, you know, that's that debittered black malt. And then 1 ounce of Glacier hops at 60 minutes, 1 ounce of Mount Hood at 5 minutes, 1 ounce of Willamette at 5 minutes, and then Liberty hops, 1 ounce at Flameout. And then he threw me another curve. He instead of an American ale yeast, he suggested Imperial's Tartan, which I believe is a Scottish ale yeast. So I brewed that yesterday, and it's happily fermenting today, and the wort tasted really good. And I'm really interested to see, you know, how the hops and that Scottish yeast play together.
How warm are you fermenting that?
The room temperature, let's see, I think it's like 68 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, you'll get some good, I've played with that yeast before, you'll get some good fruity ester at that temperature.
Nice. So that's our inspiration from listeners on the brown ales, and I'm hoping that you know, we part of the conversation, you know, with Chris was to just have fun, you know, at brown ale's expense, and brown ale doesn't seem to have so many fans that we'd, you know, irritate a large percent of the audience. So.
And all great sounding recipes that were submitted. One thing I noticed about all of them is they're all pretty complex. Yeah. A lot of parts to it, and I think that's by nature of the style. You just got to be careful. You don't add too many to the point where it does get muddy, and it does get, you know, your message gets a little lost in the noise of all those specialty hops. The one recipe on the East Coast with the use of maple, that sounds really good. I don't know if you could enter that into a competition as a brown and score that well, just because that pushes it kind of outside of the style. That does sound really good.
Yeah, and it sounds like all of these guys have been playing with the recipes, you know, a long time, and so, you know, it's not a question of just going to the homebrew store and just reaching into the bins and getting a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and, you know, seeing what happens. So it's nice to have a tested recipe to play with.
Yeah, and I don't think you'll find too many brown ales out there that are really good that happened on accident. I think it is very deliberate, and it's a style you really have to dial in through iterations.
Well, excellent. Anything else for the cause, Adam?
Oh, I don't know. Put me on the spot like that. I think all styles are deserving of our attention and our love. It's beer. You can't get too worked up about it one way or the other. And I think my hope, and I think a lot of brewers would agree with me on this, my hope is that these traditional styles make a little bit of a resurgence, I think, and hope people are going to get a little tired of beers or super boozy pastry stouts, and they start looking at these styles that just kind of quietly sit in the background and over the years or decades or centuries even. Hope those come back, and it sounds like at least a number of your listeners are fighting the good fight on that.
Well, there you go. Well, Adam, I appreciate your writing, and I appreciate your taking time, and best of luck to you and everybody up there at Twin Span.
Thank you.
Well, thanks to Adam, and many thanks to those of you who reached out to defend brown ale. One more thought on the subject from the mailbag that came in after I recorded with Adam. Friend of the show, Scott Kaway, writes in and says, so you take a big IPA recipe and add a couple of pounds of brown malt. The brown malt should not be crushed and should be put in a sealed plastic bag. Do the recipe as you normally would, and after it's in the fermenter, put the sealed brown bag next to the fermenter. When the fermentation is done, toss the bag of brown malt because it's done its job. And you will have a rather light but tasty, quote-unquote, brown ale. So one more dig from the brown ale skeptics. I'm looking forward to tasting how mine turns out. I'm not skeptical about that. I know that's going to be a delicious beer. So stay tuned for the results of that. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our mobile-friendly shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody supporting us through our Patreon page. Special goodies coming your way. Check that out at patreon.com/basicbrewing. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.